Welcome back. FF Dynasty 260 proudly presents episode 13 of the Redraft Podcast. This week we are recapping week 10. Pat, our fearless leader, is out tonight, so I'll be stepping in as our quote-unquote host. I am the at-home dad. You can find me on Twitter at FF the at-home dad. I'm joined tonight by Mike and John. Mike, tell the people how they can reach you.
You guys can find me on Twitter at MikeSports22. Got a bunch of cool content coming out this week. Just recently published a piece about what to do with Cooper Kupp and how to replace him. You guys can find that on Twitter. John, why don't you tell the good people where they can find you at?
You can find me on the Twitter machine at John McGlynn at Meathead underscore 75. I don't have as much cool content as Mike, but I put out some good stuff every once in a while. And with that, hey, Seth, do we got any giveaways going on this week?
Oh, thanks for the assist. We sure do. We actually have a double win for our listeners and our Twitter followers. First of all, make sure you follow all of us and our main Twitter account at FFD260. Then check out our latest tweet about drafters.com. There's a link embedded in there that gets you a free $10 credit and a chance to win a signed authentic jersey from our really good friends over at Pristine Auction. So that's drafters.com and Pristine auction.com. Be sure to check both of those out. Let them know that you got there through FFD 260, or even better, go directly to FFDynasty260.com so that you can check out everything on our giveaways page. We got lots of good promo codes and lots of good things going on there. All right, fellas, you ready to fire things up here?
Fire it up, baby.
Let's go.
All right, so let's jump into some injuries. The biggest one, in my opinion, Mike, you already touched on it, Cooper Kupp, torn ACL, season is done. What a hit there. Also, Dez Bryant, we were talking him up last week. That's why you have that one roster spot that you burn and churn for guys like this, who it's like, he could be amazing. Oh, wait, he tore his Achilles, his season's over. All right, never mind. That happened in his very first practice back. Oh, well. Hopefully, best goes out to those two guys. Marvin Jones has a bone bruise. He's day-to-day. And then you have Jordy Nelson and Martavis Bryant both dealing with knee injuries. They're week to week. And then Devontae Parker, who I, for some reason, just can't seem to quit. I keep trying to get him. Now has an AC joint sprain in his left shoulder and is out for at least a few weeks.
I can't believe that Devontae Parker is actually hurt. That's amazing.
I know, right? I feel like his career has proven one thing, and that's he's an Iron Man who never gets hurt. Wait, do I have that wrong?
I sent sarcasm in that statement.
Anyways, we'll transfer from there into the news. So obviously the most important news was Dez tearing his Achilles. The second most important piece of news, Le'Veon Bell failed to show up by the deadline for him to be an eligible player for this year, which means he is done, which a lot of people are going to be super duper pissed off about because they drafted him with one of the top four picks. Ouch. That hurts. But that just leaves the door open for wild hypothetical and just all sorts of great ways for this next conversation to go, which I'm going to ask you guys, where would you be most excited about Bell going to next year? Because all likelihood, he's not going to be in Pittsburgh next year. So where would you guys really be excited to see Bell go?
Yeah, there's zero chance he's in Pittsburgh next year. That relationship's burned and turned over. It's done. Well, I think the best fantasy fit for him would be to go to Indy. Imagine an offense with Andrew Luck, a good offensive line that hasn't allowed him to be sacked in 4 weeks, T.Y. Hilton, those two good tight ends, and Le'Veon Bell coming out of the backfield. If the offense is producing at a high level now, imagine when you add a three-down monster back behind Andrew Luck and see what that offense can do. The Colts have the most cap space going into the offseason right now projected, and we know the owner, Jim Irsay, likes to make big, splashy moves. I think it's the perfect match.
Does Bell become the – like, what number does he become in that rotation then? Because you have Hilton as the number one pass catcher there, then no other wide receivers, and then you have Ebron and Jack Doyle that are the next best pass catchers there. So does Bell jump, like, right into the number two if he goes there? Or does, like, Ebron slash Doyle, the hybrid of them two, take the two spot?
I think it's Bell. I mean, Bell could even easily take over the one spot if they want to feature him like Pittsburgh has in the past. But either way, if the Colts are smart, they'll go out and get Andrew Luck as many and as expensive pieces as they can afford all the cap space they got, because they for years have screwed him over with poor play behind and around him. So go get Bell, keep T.Y., the two tight ends, and then, hell, go sign a Golden Tate in free agency and draft the receiver in the first round. I'll approve.
There's a lot of good receivers for Indianapolis. There's a lot of good options for Indianapolis at receiver next year. I just think they put so much, you know, they got Marlon Mack, who's, you know, up and down. He's not horrible, but he's starting to
solid.
Get a little bit better. Hines, Jordan Wilkins isn't panning out to what they expected. I understand that Indy's a really tasty spot for him to land. I just, on my part, I think the Jets are. You're probably the favorite for him in the public opinion anyway. Elijah McGuire is a good PPR back on the backfield they were kind of waiting on, but they know Crowell's gone at the end of this year. But they got a lot of young receivers, but a young quarterback they could dump off the Bell that like Bell gets in Pittsburgh right now. I think the Jets is a spot to go.
My only, like, I would be more excited about the Colts than the Jets, even though the Jets seem to be on kind of that upward trajectory. At least it makes it seem that way. It's hard to be a Jets fan. And I live in Long Island, which is Jets fan central. And I see a lot of sad Jets fans every single Sunday. One of my best friends is a sad Jets fan. And it's because that team just can't ever seem to make the right decision. And I feel like getting Bell would be getting a good piece and making a good decision. I just don't know if the Jets are the team that can make that decision.
It would be a good spot for the Jets as well for them to get Bell, help Darnold out substantially. The only problem is we saw what happened with Kirk Cousins. The Vikings offered a little less money and he picked a better team. So if you're Le'Veon Bell, and you're saying, you know, do I want to go play for the Jets for X amount of dollars, or I want to go play for the Colts for $6 million less? You know, he's used to winning. I don't think he's going to enjoy being in New York and getting 4 to 5 wins a year.
No, I understand that too. And money's obviously a big issue for him. Money's a huge issue for him, as everybody can see. I don't know if he's going to get the. There's no tight end in New York, which is great for him. He's got a lot out of the backfield catches. It'll be great for him. There's so many options that Andrew Luck turns to in Indianapolis. I think he'd just be a better player in New York for fantasy is my thought.
Yeah, but aren't you worried that if he goes to the Jets, they don't have anybody else to take attention away? He's used to having Antonio Brown be the focal point of the offense, so he's not seeing all the defensive attention. He goes to Indy, you still got to worry about T.Y. and the tight ends, and Lux makes nothing out of, you know, schmo players. As opposed to go to the Jets, it's him and Robbie Anderson at best, and Robbie's a free agent, I believe.
Indy's got a lot better defense than the Jets, too. I think Indy's got a bunch better defense than the Jets, so you agree or disagree?
I don't know. I like what the Jets have. They got some young pieces. Both defenses are not upper echelon right now, but they both have some nice young players that, you know, Darius Leonard is getting a lot of hype for Defensive Rookie of the Year, and rightfully so. So maybe that's why the Colts, but, you know, they got Jamal Adams, Leonard Williams, Deron Lee. I mean, the Jets got some pieces as well. I know they haven't played well of late, but they've been banged up in the secondary, and that's really affected them.
Yeah. Well, let's get out of fantasy realm. That hypothetical fantasy realm and move into some real fantasy and jump into just kind of players that we're looking at who are moving up and down, some situations that we're paying attention to. Jump into really some guys that we're interested in seeing kind of what happens with them moving forward. So, Mike, why don't you start us off in the quarterback position? Who are you liking for next week or moving forward?
Give me Dak Prescott. And despite him getting a bad rap, Prescott has been solid for fantasy owners over the last four games, averaging just under 22 fantasy points per game. During that four-game span, the Cowboys are 2-2, and they're starting to play better on offense after the Amari Cooper trade. But during that span, Prescott has been the QB10 ahead of guys like Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees. With Amari Cooper in the fold, Prescott has 513 pass yards and four total touchdowns in the two games. This week, I especially like him because the Falcons are the fourth friendliest team against opposing QBs, giving up an average of 24 points per game about. And furthermore, the Falcons have allowed opposing QBs to score 20 or more fantasy points in seven of their last eight games, the exception being Alex Smith, and we could all agree Alex Smith is, well, trash. So, you know, if you need a streamer quarterback this week with six teams on a bye, Brady's on a bye, Mayfield's on a bye, Dak Prescott should be available in your league. Go get him.
Yeah, I absolutely love this take, and that's not just me being a Cowboys fan. That's me thinking that the Cowboys could actually end up winning the division still, and if not, at least making a push for, you know, maybe the second best in the division, maybe enough to get that kind of wild card spot. So I expect the Cowboys to start turning it on, and it looks like since their bye, they have been. The fact that they were able to beat Philly, that's a huge statement. And they did it. Yes, it was a game where, you know, Philly fell, what was it, 7 yards shy of being able to tie it. Yep. But the defense looked really good. The offense, the way that I criticized them last week of every time they were in third down running the same screenplay, they only had one series where I was like, that was the dumbest series that you've run. And that was literally the series that they had with 2 minutes left in the game. And for some reason, they like ran some weird run play with Zeke that like they didn't get anything on. Then they ran a screen pass out to Cole Beasley, who got tackled for negative 2 yards. And then it was like a designed run for Dak. Like, sorry, I had to get that out. That was my Cowboys anger right there. But aside from that, offensively, they looked great, especially against a defense that, like, Philly's secondary has not been that good, but their defensive line has been really strong, and the Cowboys looked really strong against them. I really like the Cowboys moving forward. Like I said, they could be a team that's making a push to try and get into the playoffs over the next few weeks. So that becomes even that much more valuable.
Yeah, definitely. And here's the other thing about Dak I like. Over the next 6 weeks, he has Atlanta, New Orleans, and Tampa, all three teams in the bottom like 4 or 5 against opposing QBs.
Yeah.
So if you're streaming position, he's perfect for you. And further, your point about the playoffs, Seth, they play an NFC team in five of their next six games. So they can make up some playoff ground if they can get a winning streak going here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So we're going to keep the trend going of second half performers here. And I'm going to move up the best second half performer. And this is a guy that, you know, he's always kind of up. So except in the beginning of the season, but I'm going Russell Wilson. He finished as the fourth best quarterback this past week, and he's putting on his run for the second half of the season, and he just looks like he's getting better and better. It looks like that team's getting healthier and healthier, and they play Thursday night against the Packers. So these Thursday night games have been one team being absolutely dominant, if not a shootout. So I'm going to roll the dice here and say Russell Wilson is going to be on the side that is going to be putting up points.
I usually love Russell Wilson like everybody else does in the second half of the season when the offense finally clicks, especially as a Doug Baldwin owner. I'd love to see Russell Wilson shape up to where he belongs. I really hope that he pans out.
Finally.
Yeah. Russ Wilson's notoriously a second half QB. I'm a little worried that they are going back to their, you know, days of run the ball, but we'll see. He had 3 touchdowns last week despite getting off to a slow start, and I agree this week they should put up plenty of points against the Packers. So,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the best things right there is going up against the Packers. With that being said, John, who are you moving up?
Well, I'm moving up somebody I used to talk a lot of crap about earlier in the season. But now that his hand's a little bit better, he doesn't have to wear a glove. He's got a go-to receiver. He's got some running backs who are actually playing the way they should be running. I'm moving up Marcus Mariota. I think he's looked good the last couple weeks. I think we've got a couple more weeks of him going up against Indy this week. Like Mike said before, the defense is okay, a lot of young and up-and-comers. But I think Mariota is doing what he should be doing to win games and then some, catching passes. Everybody's got to cover the receivers now because of that, the running backs are actually getting open. There's holes around. The offense is flowing. It's opening up to where Marcus Mariota wants this offense.
Yeah, I found that really interesting because Mariota is the guy that I am moving down. I was a person that had, you know, pie on my face because I was talking smack about Mariota, especially last week with him going in against the Patriots. I did not expect him to have the type of game that he had. And the fact of the matter is I still don't believe it. I think that this was – you know, I think it's a coincidence that he's there now. I do not think that it's a trend. Two games is a coincidence for me. 3 games would be a trend. If I'm wrong, I will swallow all the pride and say, absolutely, I was wrong. Mariota is good. He's back. He's healthy. The Titans team looks like a legitimate Titans team. I don't see it right now. I see just
the season started out pretty bad when they played Miami. You know, that's Houston. Miami, that Miami game was a joke in the wind and the weather. Houston was kind of – he didn't play for more than a series for a couple games. He came back the last couple weeks to bye. That's what they took him to bye to kind of get – the Chargers game wasn't too bad either. Right before the bye, then since the bye, he's been coming around. He's been doing real well. I think that's what it took to get everybody, get him healthy, get the team, get some reps, get everybody on the coaches' same page, and here's where we're at now.
Yeah, I mean, it's a wait and see situation, and I'd rather wait and see with him, with the potential of me missing out on Mariota than on me trying to either grab him or start him or something like that and just having him flop. So I'm sitting on the outside again with Mariota, and it looks like you're trying to get on the inside. So, with me moving down Mariota, John, who are you moving down?
Joe Flacco.
Shocker.
He's been somebody that I've always stuck up for the last couple of years. I thought that he would really kind of make his move this year back up against the wall. He's been actually doing pretty good with that. He's been doing real good, holding off the young quarterbacks and even, just doing what he's got to do to win games. But now he's hurt. Even if he does play with a hip injury, he won't be very mobile. They'll the defensive line will put the pin their ears back and go after him. I'm thinking at this point in time, they need to either decide if they're going to keep Flacco or if they're going to bring in the Lamar Jackson, or even if Lamar Jackson's not ready, they're probably going to be bringing RG3 to start and then, have Lamar Jackson be a gimmick guy every once in a while, like he's been. But Joe Flacco, I think the end is near anyway, and they got to move on and see what they have in Jackson. So there couldn't be a better time than now to kind of blame the injury for why we benched him. So that's why I think Flacco, even if he does play, I don't think he's going to do what he did before most of the season. I think it's time to move on.
Yeah, Flacco's kind of struggling. He was playing better to start the last 4 or 5 games. He's been struggling with touchdowns. He has 4 in total in his last, 6 games. So it's probably Lamar Jackson's time, whether the injury is serious enough to keep Flacco out or not. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, and we'll talk about this more in a little bit, how
about it right now.
Ravens team. Well, if you want to talk about it now, we'll talk about it.
About right now.
Well, one thing I've had my eye on is the whole quarterback situation, Flacco versus Lamar Jackson, how it impacts the rest of the team. Now, this is really interesting. We won't know maybe till kickoff. I mean, they may know internally, but not let us know until kickoff to keep the advantage over their opponent. The simple breakdown is if Flacco plays, I have more trust in the receivers this week and going forward. He has chemistry with them. He's an established passer. We know what he is. He has struggled, but we know what he is. If it's Jackson, I wouldn't play the receivers until I see what happens because I want to see how he links up with them chemistry-wise. Lamar Jackson has some trouble throwing certain routes in college, etc. The Bengals this week's a good matchup for the running backs, but if Lamar Jackson is playing, they're going to run a lot of read options to take advantage of Jackson's mobility in his legs, and that bodes very well for Alex Collins. You notice there's like two or three plays this year. They got down the red zone and ran the read option, and the entire defense collapsed on Lamar, and Alex Collins was able to get to the edge and score. If he plays, I expect that they'll run that kind of concept maybe a dozen or more times just to take advantage of the defense's concern with Lamar. And if that's the case, if you have Alex Collins, get him in your lineup no matter what.
What does that do for Smokey John Brown? What do you think what happens there? Because Jackson really can't throw the deep ball too accurate. What happens with John Brown now?
I bench him. I see what happens this week. It's a good matchup against Cincinnati. They can't stop you, me, and Seth. But if it doesn't look pretty, it might be time to drop John Brown because he has been struggling the last couple of weeks with Flacco struggling. And like you said, Lamar Jackson's accuracy issues were well documented on his college film. And now we'll see how much progress he's made through training camp and the season. But if they can't throw accurately downfield, this is going to become kind of like the Redskins in RG3's rookie year where they run a lot of read options and trickery plays and stuff like that. It's going to kill John Brown's value.
Yeah.
Which is disappointing because he was very good to start the year, and now it's kind of become a guessing game at best.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, I was saying this last week. I'm a big fan of Lamar Jackson. I think he's going to be able to do really well there. I think he's actually going to hopefully bring some life to that Ravens offense that has, like, it looked decent in the beginning of the season, but as of late it's kind of sputtered out. And I think whenever I think of the Ravens, I think of a really strong defensive team and then an offense that is just kind of, it's all right, whatever. But just kind of looking at NFL.com's scouting report of him, the one thing that stands out to me is there's a quote from NFL.com. Ball comes out with flick of the wrist reminiscent of Michael Vick. That right there is what I want. I want that. I want that all day, every day. And the fact that he is a dynamic playmaker and can do all sorts of things with his feet, can roll out, can run the play actions. To me, that's the type of stuff that's going to make this Ravens team fun, interesting, and hopefully be able to, you know, lift up some of these wide receivers and running backs that, you know, they have decent games here and there, but just not a fan of Flacco. I don't think he has enough to be able to move them up. I don't see him as a threat the way that I see Lamar.
That scares me, that the comparison to Michael Vick, because Michael Vick, he didn't have any touch on his ball. He couldn't throw the screen pass. If he threw anything, it was 100 miles an hour right at somebody, whether it was 2 feet away or 1,000 yards down the field. That kind of scares me when people can compare him to Michael Vick.
Exactly, and that was the problem with Lamar Jackson coming out, is he's got an arm, but his touch and placement needed serious work. I agree with you, Seth. They should go with Lamar. They need a spark plug in his offense. The last couple weeks, it has looked dormant at best. I just think it's going to kill a receiver's fantasy value because you're going to see a lot more read option kind of stuff with the running game. They're going to take advantage of his legs and then run simple concept reads and play action off of that. So,
yeah. No, Lamar Jackson's value is definitely the highest here. I'm just hoping that when you get a quarterback that can run around, kind of like a Prescott, kind of like a Wentz, kind of like, you know, like Vic back in the day, like that opened things up where, you know, hopefully he can put a little touch on it. He's not just slinging things 100 miles an hour, but
there's no guarantee that Lamar Jackson is going to be in either. They haven't announced a starter yet. So what happens if they do say, what happens if they do say RG3? Is he worth picking up this week or no?
No. Not unless you're in some, you know, crazy 2QB super flex deep league or whatever.
Where yeah.
I mean, come by.
It's mine.
And unless he's gotten over like his fear to step up in the pocket, RG3 is, he's just such a scary play for me because that was my biggest concern with him. I mean, ever since he blew out his knee, is that whole next season you just watched him. He was afraid to play. He was afraid to step up. He was just so afraid to put that front knee into any type of danger that he was like hopping and throwing. So, yeah. I mean, we've gone completely off topic here. Let's bring it back a little bit. Let's stop pooing on the Ravens and let's move to Kirk Cousins, Captain Kirk. What do you got for us, Mike, before we move on to running backs?
I'll make it quick and brief. After he got off to a hot start, he scored 20 more points in 3 of his first 4 games. He has failed to score 20 or more in more than just 1 of the last 5. The Vikings want to run the ball more, and it's impacted his value. He's failed to throw more than 2 touchdowns in any game since week 4. The Vikings have found success by using Dalvin Cook and Latavius Murray on the ground. The defense is starting to play up to par, even though they're kind of banged up in the secondary. And this week especially, I have him outside my top 18 QBs because the Bears are 7th toughest team against opposing QBs, giving up just 16 points per game on average. Furthermore, they have held the last 3 quarterbacks they faced under 16 points. This game very well could be a dogfight with both defenses stepping up and neither offense be able to muster much production. So if you have Kirk Cousins, you might want to bench him and see if you can find somebody like Dak off the waiver wire and playing this week because he could easily give you a single-digit performance.
Yeah. What's really interesting about that is a perfect segue into the situation that I kind of want to talk about here, which is Aaron Rodgers' situation. Right now he's sitting at like the 9th best quarterback through the season. And this is his slate of games for the last 16, last 6 weeks before it's really the end of the season because nobody should be playing in week 17. He goes up against the Seahawks, the Vikings, the Cards, the Falcons, the Bears, the Jets. The Seahawks are number 1 against quarterbacks in fantasy points. The Cardinals are number 2 against quarterbacks in fantasy points. The Bears, they finish at 7th, and the Jets are at 22nd. Is the opposite, so that's
14th. 10th. No, 10th. Yeah, you're right.
So, yeah, they go up against 4 top 10 defenses against fantasy quarterbacks to close out the year. They only have 1 really favorable matchup, and that's against the Falcons in week 14. The Vikings are 15th. So I'm at a spot where if I have Aaron Rodgers, I'm looking to sell him based on name value for someone else that is like I'm not saying trade away Rodgers for like a Nick Mullins, even though Nick Mullins has been killing it. Lots of Nick Mullins love. But if you have like in one league, I have Wilson and Rodgers. If I could get rid of Rodgers, I would in a heartbeat right now. Because I have Wilson there to back it up. I mean, I just feel like he's always going to be Rodgers. He's always going to have that potential to drop an amazing stat line.
Last week, he only threw, 24 passes, 26 passes. The running game showed up. You know, he's got a lot of young receivers that are, kind of stepping up right now with some injuries, but I don't blame you.
Yeah, I'm at a point where I'm starting to think if it's a one quarterback league, I would rather try and have someone else besides Rodgers if that means I can get another kind of piece onto my team. I'm not saying just go out and cut Rodgers because that's just idiotic. He's still Aaron Rodgers. But if I could get, you know, you're probably not going to get a ton for him. But if you were able to get, you know, one of the lesser named guys and a piece, or you can use Aaron Rodgers in a trade with somebody else to get two better pieces. Like I'm ready to say I am fearful enough of Rodgers' situation with his young receivers, an improving running game, a team that, let's be honest, like, are they going to make the playoffs? Like, no. I feel like they no. should, but I don't think they're going to. So,
no, like, I
signs point to,
you know, the whole combination of factors and everything is suggesting that this is not the year to have Rodgers on the back end of the season. Obviously, if you don't have a alternative way to replace Rodgers, either by trading him, you have a backup QB on the roster, or able to properly stream the rest of the way through, plan ahead, guys, look at the schedule, figure out how you're going to stream, just don't assume you can. By all means, try and trade him on name value, because somebody in the league is going to go, Aaron Rodgers, really? That was the guy who was going to take in the third round, and they'll give you a starting, you know, an RB2 or hell, even an RB1 potentially that you can use instead.
If you can get an RB1, the league you're in is playing with chumps.
Yes.
But if you can do that, do it. Win that money.
I totally agree. Yeah. If you could flip him for, say, an Aaron Jones or Kerryon Johnson plus another mid-level quarterback, whether it's Wilson or Matt Ryan, by all means, take the deal and run.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I mean, that's my thing. I'm just nervous about Rodgers. John, you want to talk a little bit about what situation you're watching?
Yeah, real fast. Just because I have dynasty interest in Kyle Aletta, I'm watching the Eli Manning saga. I think this would have been Kyle Aletta's job if he didn't act like a fool with the police a couple weeks ago, right before the bye. They stuck with Manning. He got the job done yesterday, last night. I think they have to move on. They know that Eli's not the quarterback in the future. They got to find out what they're going to do. If they got to draft the quarterback, or if Aletta's worth his salt, at least give him a try anyway to say, like, yeah, we got something here. Or we don't. I don't think they do, but it's worth a try instead of just sticking Manning in there to ride out in the sunset. This is my take on the Manning situation.
I agree. Manning at this point is just starting for sentimental sake. He's not going to be around in 2019. They know that. He knows that. The whole world knows that. So give Aletta a shot. You never know. Yeah. I was a little high on him coming out, but you know, you're right. They got to figure out, is he the guy? Do they got to go draft the guy? Is there anybody even worth drafting?
Well, they got an easy work for us. Easy. I mean, they had a great. They could have. Aletta didn't act like a fool. That's what I'm saying. San Francisco would have been kind of a, you know, little bit of a rough matchup. But then they got Tampa Bay, you know, and then he could have really got some kind of a mechanism going with the running backs, receivers out of the back, you know, the running backs out of, with Saquon out of the backfield with OBJ, and then they got to play Philly, Chicago, Washington, some tough defenses. But I mean, he could have had a couple weeks to really, you know, with San Fran and Tampa Bay to get himself ready for a tough matchups. But they kind of threw it there.
I'll give you a worse one. By them being San Francisco, they pretty much ensure themselves they won't get the number one pick.
Yeah, I know, that was stupid.
They played the kid, lost, and see what he has. But now they very well may walk themselves into out of the top five based upon what happens the rest of their way forward. And if Herbert comes out, Oakland's going to grab him, and New York's going to look like a bigger fool than they were last year. So
this is a horrible quarterback class, too, yeah. So
yeah.
Giants, Saquon Barkley is a great, great player. But the Giants, I feel like, are going to be reeling from not having a quarterback for a while unless they can find, you know, one of these late round, you know, diamonds in the rough. And I'm not even saying like a Tom Brady diamond in the rough. Like, they need like a Dak Prescott fourth round diamond in the rough, like someone like that that can come in, and or a Nick Mullins diamond.
Yeah, they got OBJ. OBJ and Shepard. Evan Ingram's a great tight end, and Saquon's, you know,
Saquon, yeah.
He's got a tough time. He's got a tough time finding holes between. He likes to kick everything out, and the catching pass out of the backfield is kind of his forte. But again, yeah. What happens if they draft the quarterback who doesn't, you know, who's got a big arm like a Jared Goff or something like that, like, you know, that type of player? Then maybe 2 years from now, what happens then? Does that kill Saquon Barkley? Is that because he gets so many points out of the backfield, out of receiving out of the backfield?
Nah, I don't think so. He does. He's going to be – the only thing that could kill his value other than injuries at the offensive line could get any worse, and I don't think it can.
Yeah. And, I mean, your example of Goff, I mean, proves it right there. Look at what Gurley's doing with Goff. I mean
– And like, more importantly,
the better the quarterback, the better the weapons around. I mean, it's a rising tide raises all boats. I'm not much of a sailor, so I don't know if that's said exactly right, but
we get the gist.
Yeah.
I meant to say Josh Allen, sorry about that. But.
Oh. Even still, if he can come, like Josh, if you put Josh Allen on the Giants right now, well, not right now because he's hurt, but I think that.
They'd have Wayne Gallman as a running back.
No.
No.
Well, yeah, because then they wouldn't have drafted Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But they could have had Nick Chubb instead.
Yeah, that would have been a great situation.
They could have had Sam Darnold or whatever quarterback you want with Mayfield at 2 and Nick Chubb right now. If, you know. And we all love Saquon, but could we honestly sit here and argue, you know what, having Nick Chubb and a young quarterback is worth more than Eli, or worth more than Saquon?
That is something that we'll be able to answer in a couple of years. I don't know if we can answer that right now. Like right now, it's real easy because the Giants have just sucked this whole year to be like, well,
they screwed up.
Yeah, but
we never know. The quarterback could be the bum, and Nick Chubb, knock on wood, could potentially get hurt again.
You don't want to put injuries out there as like a sticking point for any player. But the fact of the matter is injuries happen. One of these number one quarterbacks could be hurt and season done. Saquon Barkley could get hurt and not just season done, but career done.
Don't ever say it again.
John's superstitious over there.
They own him everywhere.
It happens all the time. Wait until somebody's on a Madden cover. Boom, done. Career over. Anyways, speaking of Saquon, let's jump into our running backs. I'll fire it up here with who I'm moving up because it's somebody that if I said I was moving this person up in the beginning of the year or 2 years ago, people would be like, well, duh. But David Johnson, moving him up, I think he's at a spot now. Like that offense just looks a lot better. Brian Leftwich looks like he's able to say, like, okay, game plan, put the ball in our best players' hands. Okay, that's it. That's all we're going to do. Okay. And David Johnson looked really good this past week. He's going up against Oakland right now, which, I mean, it doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah, Oakland's quit. They're looking to vacations in Malibu and wherever the hell else they want to go. Here's the interesting and important part about David Johnson. Since Byron Leftwich taken over as the offensive coordinator in the 2 games, 11 catches, 126 receiving yards, and a touchdown. They are getting him the ball out in space, on the perimeter, in one-on-one isolated situations.
Where he does his best.
Exactly. Mike McCoy's dumbass was, you know, giving him up the gut carries one after the other behind a porous offensive line. And we saw what happened. He was not effective. You get him out in space and boom, 37 PPR points this past week, almost doubling his previous season high. So I know it's crazy to say we're moving David Johnson up, but you know, this guy, you know, if you're able to trade for him or still might be able to, if your league's crazy, go get him because he's got a great schedule the rest of the way out. Every game is either a positive matchup or a neutral one.
Yeah. I think you missed that train already. This is a week too late to trade for him. Now, after 1 good week, everybody knows that what the future is going to look like. where the offense is. So
maybe your league mate's in a coma or something or just woke up. So.
And my thing is, I think it's more of not so much a moving him up, but just finally feeling confident.
In
being able to start him. Because for the first like 8 weeks, it was like, oh God, you screwed me over for the like 5 weeks straight. Okay, this looks like a decent matchup. Let me put you in there. And it's like, oh God, they're not using him at all. How are they still not? And it was frustrating. So
he was getting the volume though. That's the thing. You always go by you know, the numbers come. If he's getting the touches, it's going to come. If he's getting the touches, it's going to come. But if you look at those charts, he's running straight up the middle, like Mike said, and getting nothing. But he was getting 22 touches. You know, it was crazy.
Yeah, and that's where analytics needs to really be kind of looked at is, you know, yes, volume is great. He had 22 touches, but where were those 22 touches coming from? Because if they're literally running it up the middle where David Johnson and I could get the same amount of yardage because it's literally just run up the middle, oh, damn, I'm tackled, and I gained hopefully a yard, which I see the hyperbole in that. But anyways, like that doesn't mean anything. But if you like Mike was just saying, 11 times out in space getting catches, that those touches are worth so much more. And that's really, really what you're looking for there. Let's go with another person that's kind of getting some touches here. John, you're propping up Kerryon Johnson. So why don't you talk a little bit about him?
Yeah, just he's finally kind of breaking out of where he needs to be. They're giving him a chance now. I know Theo Riddick's going to catch a couple of balls out of the backfield, but I think this is the Kerryon Johnson show now. I don't really think that he has much competition. It's they trust him. He's making things work. You know, I think he's going to be probably somewhere, you know, in the top 10 this week in running backs. That's what I think. Playing against Carolina, number 12 defense against the run. It's they're not the worst, but still he's making things work. I think even for the rest of the year he's going to be the go-to guy. So I'm all in on Kerryon Johnson.
Yeah.
I like KJ. You know, we worried about coming in the year about the three-headed monster with him, Riddick, and Blunt. I think Blunt's kind of an afterthought at this point. Riddick's kind of taking on more of a slot role with Golden Tate gone. Marvin Jones dinged up, so he may end up kind of playing really hybrid wide receiver next week. Like I said, Kerryon Johnson gets Carolina. They've been killed by running backs in the past. And the playoff schedule, two of the three games, week 14 at Arizona, week 15 at Buffalo, both positive matchups. Now, the championship game against Minnesota, not so much. But, hey, those first 2 weeks, really good. So
Now does the fact that the Lions are pretty much out of playoff contention, and, I mean, let's be honest, the Bills and who was the other one that you said?
Arizona.
Yeah, they've been out of the playoff hunt since basically the season started. Like, is there any concern there about, like, does that make it better or worse for Kerryon Johnson? The fact that it's like, well, he's a rookie. Let's just get him in there and get as many, many opportunities for him as we can. Because, I mean, at this point, who cares?
I'm not worried about the lack of playoff enthusiasm from any of the teams, the Lions or their opponents, because, you know, barring a career-ending injury or career-altering injury, you're not worried about the injury factor, and that can happen anytime, anywhere on the field. So they're going to want to get him, you know, involved, get him reps, get him game experience, etc. So that way, going in the next year, when he is the de facto bell cow with Riddick and Blunt gone in free agency, he's seen everything and everything thrown at him. So there's no reason to worry about the lack of desire to win because of the playoffs for him not to get the touches or usage. If anything, it might actually go up a little bit because they may want to say, you know, let's not let Stafford get hit. Our offensive line can't block worth of crap right now. So give Kerryon Johnson 30 carries and let him see what he can do.
Yeah, I agree, especially if Marvin Jones might be maybe more than a week injury, which it's a bone bruise they kind of determine. But if theoretically you might get a couple more touches, but that opens everything up for Kerryon Johnson. So I'm that's why I'm moving up this week.
Yeah, no, I'm not against it. I actually have been wanting Kerryon to be good for a while.
Everybody wanted somebody to be good in Detroit, yes.
Yeah. Oh, where's Pat when you need him?
I know.
You missed the wrong episode.
The Dolphins when I'm not here, so.
Yeah. Anyways, Mike, I'm going to throw this out there. I don't like your moving up here, so why don't you try and convince me the running back that you're moving up?
This is a one-week moving up kind of thing. For the rest of the year, bleh. It's not pretty. But Barber's had a poor season thus far. Nobody's going to argue that. Scoring less than 8 fantasy points in every game but twice this year. However, in those two games, he's averaging just under 18 points per game. The opponents, the Falcons and the Bengals, who are both in the top three most friendly teams against opposing running backs in terms of points per game given up. The Giants, they're not that bad. They're eighth, but they've given up 28.4 points per game to opposing backs. And over the last 2 weeks, 285 rushing yards and two touchdowns, 64.2 PPR fantasy points. It's a matchup-based thing for Barber. If you got to squeeze an RB2 in because you got guys on a bye, Michelle, White, Drake, Nick Chubb, McCoy, Duke Johnson, Breida, you name it.
The entire AFC East, pretty much.
Yeah. Actually, awesome. You're right. The entire AFC East. Dolphins, Patriots, Jets. But, you know, you could do worse. And he's probably on the waiver wire in a lot of leagues. Pick him up. Play him this week. It's a good matchup. Throw him back next week.
Yeah, I just, oof, yikes.
It's not a pretty call, but, you know, we're getting to the end of, you know, Armageddon, Bimageddon, so just sometimes you just got to take the medicine and move on.
Yeah, that's, I'm going to need more than a spoonful of sugar for that medicine, though, because that's, yikes.
You have a whole 2-liter thing of mountain. Yeah. How's that sound?
Nah.
I agree, because Ronald Jones isn't really doing anything. And
well, he's injured anyways. So.
Yeah, so, I mean, and Rodgers, Jaquizz Rodgers isn't the world's best running back, so.
Yeah, it's a, I mean, I guess they gotta give the ball to somebody, right?
Exactly. I mean, they don't have to. They can pass all the time, but you really want to trust Fitz Tragic with 70 pass attempts?
Yeah,
and it's funny how his name changes every week.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm interested. We're going to stick with Mike here because, Mike, last week I was moving down Adrian Peterson. You weren't 100% on board with me then, but now you're moving him down this week. So I'm curious what your thoughts are.
Well, first off, I would like to apologize to all AP owners, all Redskins fans. It's my fault. I traded for him in my big money dynasty league before the injuries to the offensive line, and then – I'm bad karma, so my bad, guys. But what I didn't like last week, Seth, was the matchup was so good on paper. And now we've seen how the Redskins have looked with all the injuries. Since he scored a season-high 26.6 fantasy points against the Giants a couple weeks ago, the Redskins have lost four offensive linemen, three of which for the season, and have struggled to run the ball. The last two games, Peterson has just 85 rushing yards and 15 fantasy points. The Texans are tough against opposing running backs, giving up about 23 points per game. And the Texans haven't given up has only given up three rushing touchdowns all year long. The only way Peterson hits double-digit points, I think, is if he gets in the end zone. And honestly, I just don't think it's going to happen. So I don't know if you want to drop him just yet, maybe give him one more week, but it's getting to the point where he's definitely on the bench and droppable for me.
You know, Washington every year has these problems with the offensive linemen. Last year they had defensive linemen starting at, you know, or coming in to fill in during games towards the end of the season with the offensive linemen they must not be giving them milk or something in Washington for these poor guys. Their bones are falling apart. And even Cabrie Ribs is scoring touchdowns now. So, I mean, it's for some reason they're getting away from the AP show.
Yeah, games have also been part of the problem as well. They got it behind, and that leads better to Chris Thompson or with him being injured, Bibbs. But it's just, honestly, can we say there's anybody in a Washington uniform that you like playing fantasy-wise? I mean, honestly, the best asset for that team fantasy-wise might be the defense, and that's shocker.
And we touched on this last week, and that's going to keep getting exposed because when defenses are on the field for 40 minutes in a game, like they wear down. When defenses have to face – you know, that when they only get three plays off because the offense goes three and out, your defense gets worn out, your defense gets scored on, your defense doesn't have the same kind of ability to get turnovers, to get sacks because the motor's just worn out. So
Everybody was looking forward to Darius Geis taking over his backfield. They weren't expecting AP to come here. And, you know, Chris Thompson was supposed to be a big part of his offense when Darius Geis went down, but he's been hurt the whole season. So it is your options are limited. Thank God AP came in here and kind of saved the season a little bit, but it's not working anymore.
Yeah, I mean, this is part of the reason why I think the Cowboys have a chance to end up winning the division here, because I expect Washington, I don't know. Don't know how they beat Tampa Bay the way that they did.
Tampa beat themselves. 5 times in the red zone, 1 field goal.
Yeah.
Turnovers, 2 misses. They beat themselves.
Yeah. I mean, they're right there is a shout out to the Washington defense. But anyways, like, I don't see Washington being able to compete really moving forward with a team that you're playing. You know, you're playing two-fifths of your starting offensive line. You're playing the third running back that you – your third-string running back that you had to bring in from another team. You're playing wide receivers that are hurt all over the field. Is Jordan Reed done yet? Is he hurt for the entire season yet? Is he the healthiest player, which is just the – epitome of irony for Washington?
He's a little dinged, but he's healthy as you could expect him to get at this point in the year. It's really bad in DC. They just had to start out, you know, Maurice Harris and Michael Floyd opposite of Dotson this past week. So it's just, like I said.
Alex Smith has the least amount of throws towards the end zone. They're not getting any, nobody's getting any red zone or end zone targets.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move off Washington, because we bashed them enough last week, and we're bashing them pretty strongly here now. So Washington sucks. Sorry. Anyways, moving on.
Tell me how you feel.
So let's move on to another team that just has kind of been underperforming, and that's Minnesota. Both John and I are dropping down. The same guy here, Dalvin Cook. And I'm really dropping down basically everyone in Minnesota's backfield. For me, it's because the Bears are number one for allowing the least fantasy points to running backs. So that right there, Cook is coming back from an injury. Yes, he looked pretty good on his return, but still, I expect the Bears to do kind of what they've been doing recently, which is scoring points and their defense being a pretty formidable run-stopping defense that creates turnovers. So, John, why don't you go ahead and talk a little bit about why you're dropping Cook down?
Well, you know, this is a weekly show, and against the Bears, I don't think there's a better defense in the league right now, the way they're playing with everybody back and healthy. The linebackers made the D-line better. The D-line's already, you know, underrated as it is. It's a bad place for a running back to be. You know, Dalvin Cook had a flashy run last week or 2 weeks ago, but it's I don't think those kind of runs are going to happen against the Bears defense that has two good flowing linebackers and a great stuffed defensive line. I don't think you're going to see any kind of flash at all for, you know, minus 10 to 15 carries. You're not going to see anything out of Dalvin Cook. They're going to be forced to pass.
Yeah. Going to say the only positive that I could see coming for Cook is the fact that you have Thielen out there. Diggs is returning this game. Diggs is healthy.
Yes. He should be.
Yeah. So you should have two premier wide receivers. Rudolph has been super disappointing this year in terms of fantasy, but it's still a strong tight end in actual football. So maybe that lifts the defense back a little bit to open up some stuff for Cook. But I would say even still, that defensive line is just so strong. And like you mentioned, the linebackers, they just flow all over the field, complete sideline to sideline linebackers. So I'm not on board with, like I said, anybody in Minnesota's backfield.
Yeah, this game could be just an ugly dogfight where we see the defense duke it out. So, yeah, I don't like either back that much this week either.
Yep. All right. Let's jump into some of the situations that we're looking at then. Let's see here. Mike, why don't you go ahead and go first, because I think yours is probably the most positive one.
Sure. We already kind of briefly talked about this with Aaron Rodgers, but Aaron Jones is playing out of his mind right now, and that's a good thing. Mike McCarthy realized, I have a talented back out here. I actually did a mock draft about a week and a half ago and projected David Montgomery go to the Packers, and that looks foolish right about now. You know, they have a couple of tough games this coming up, Seattle this week, Minnesota next week, but then they face the Cardinals and Falcons, who are both bottom four teams against opposing running backs. They have played better when they've been able to establish the run, use Jones, not put as much pressure on Rodgers. We've already gone over his rookie receivers, et cetera, et cetera. Aaron Rodgers came out publicly and said that they need to give more work to Aaron Jones. So if McCarthy has half a brain, he'll listen to his quarterback. So I like Jones the rest of the year. He's probably a mid to high end RB2 for me going forward.
Yeah, he's definitely the most explosive thing they have in their backfield. I'm not against it. I mean, there's a couple rough games that they have. They do play the Bears in week 15. But I mean, you got to get to week 15 in order to be concerned about week 15.
Exactly.
And like you said, he has Seattle Vikings cards kind of leading up to it. So those are teams that definitely the cards are run all day, every day against, but they're teams that you can move the ball a little bit on the ground. So yeah, I like it.
Yeah, you can't be too picky with running backs. And like I said, he's played great. So if they continue to give him the ball, you got at least two good matchups in the coming weeks that could, you know, get you in the playoffs in the do or die week and first round matchup. So
yeah,
I hope they keep giving him the ball.
And the best part is that he's an RB2. Like, you're starting him as an RB2 or a flex, and he was the fifth best running back this week. So if that's what you're getting out of Aaron Jones, I'll take it all day. Have a guy that I, you know, I'm starting in the flex because I picked him up late in drafts. I mean, he was going as well, like a 10th or 11th guy. He was a guy that, you know, in some leagues was waived and on the wire and stuff like that. So yeah, if you can get a guy that is a, you know, a weekly flex RB2 and can, you know, pop off into the top six, let me get that all day, every day.
Totally agree.
Yep. So John and I are talking about a similar situation, but on two different teams. And both of them is dealing with the workload being split. So John, I'll have you go first and then I'll talk about mine.
Mine is, Tevin Coleman. He had a 4 carries inside the red zone, inside the 5-yard line, and couldn't do anything. He's not a good between the tackles runner. That's what Ito Smith has been doing, vulturing some of those touchdowns. They did everything they possibly could to make Tevin Coleman, you know, get as many, become the man, and he just couldn't take advantage of it. I just worry that this game kind of put a little doubt in some of the coaches' minds. And they might want to give Ito Smith some more carries, especially since they know that, you know, Tevin Coleman's going to be gone at the end of this year. So maybe they want to see what they got in Ito Smith.
Which is really interesting, too, because everybody has been saying that Tevin Coleman is going to be, like, the number one free agent running back this year. And if he ends the season just terrible, like, that's going to affect him in redraft. That's going to affect him in dynasty. That's going to affect him next year in redraft. If he can't run in between the tackles, it's really tough to be a NFL running back.
This is where I think Tevin Coleman would be a perfect back for Indianapolis, because they don't need a ground and pound guy. He's not a backfield catcher. He is really good on the outside. He just can't, you know, they don't need a, they don't need a clock waster. They need somebody to do stuff on the outsides, which is what he is. Yeah. To make things happen anyway on the outsides.
Yeah, no, I can agree with that as well. With Bell going to be now a guaranteed free agent, Coleman's going to take a hit on the market as well there.
Oh, yeah.
he struggled, and that's why Ito Smith was such a great waiver wire pickup a few weeks ago, because he's going to take over Freeman's role in between the tackles and the goal line situation, etc. There's even a distinct possibility that Coleman still ends up back in Atlanta next year. You know, it would have to be the market be really soft and a couple of crazy things would have to happen, but he has not played well enough, like you said, Seth, to warrant saying he's a three down back and a starting caliber guy going forward. So
yeah, I can't see them keeping all three of those running backs next year.
It'd have to be at a really discounted rate for
Ito Smith, is that we outperformed what everybody thought he's going to be, stepped up pretty well. And Devonta Freeman is supposed, he's their bell cow. He's their guy. Coleman's wasn't supposed to do as much as he's doing this year. So I don't think he'll be back.
I don't know. I think it's a long shot. It would have to be, again, a really discounted rate or something crazy like that.
I could see Tevin Coleman being kind of like this, being next year's version of this year's
McKinnon.
Jerick McKinnon. Yep, 100%.
I don't think he's as bad as McKinnon. I didn't like McKinnon at all.
I think I had the bet with
me.
I had the bet with a couple of people about how I was so adamant against McKinnon, and then he got hurt. So it's kind of like I win, but I didn't really win. It's kind of technicality.
Well, by default, yeah.
I think Tevin Coleman is kind of right in that same vein of he's going to go somewhere in this off season, and depending on where he goes, his hype is going to either, you know, just fly completely off the rails, because it's like, oh, he's got this great coach, he's got this great system, he's got this great line, he's got something, 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 and people are going to lose sight of the fact that, like, he's not a three down back. Or it's going to be something where he kind of flies under the radar and he gets an opportunity and he pops and he shows that he's, you know, he can put in work when, you know, when he's called to, like what he does most of the time with the Falcons. When you ask him to be their every down guy, it takes a toll on him that he can't shoulder that burden. So
what if he goes back to a Shanahan offense?
That would be interesting.
I mean, do they need another running back in San Francisco, though?
Yeah, and they can't really get out of McKinnon's contract either.
I mean, that, like, McKinnon's there, who he's going to get work one way or another. Breda has looked phenomenal. Get rid of Alfred Morris, bring in Tevin Coleman, but what are you paying? What are you paying Coleman in order to bring him there?
Yeah, I just think they over. I don't know the guarantees of
McKinnon's contract.
I'm not sure what's. I thought it was only like a 1 year and then possibly get out, because I don't like him at all. A lot of people don't like him at all. He's one of those numbers guys, a numbers freak. A guy who was a quarterback before, became a running back by default, and really hasn't shown anything crazy anyway.
Well, here's a number for you, and I feel bad because I'm not prepared for this, but. This was the number I was throwing around all last year, is everybody wants to talk about McKinnon being a big play guy. Well, guess what? He had, I want to say it was 8 plays greater than 20 yards. You know how many Latavius Murray had? 7.
Yeah.
And everybody wants to poo-poo all over Latavius Murray. And he was just as, like, literally one play less than just as explosive as McKinnon.
I don't like McKinnon at all.
Yeah. All right.
Real quick, we move on, though, because I just pulled it up here. McKinnon's contract, they can't get out of it. It'd be a little dicey, and there'd be some dead money there, but they could get out of it if they want to. They'd be better off going to get Mark Ingram, though. If New Orleans does not re-sign him, that'd give him the hammer they need. McKinnon could go back to being the third down guy. I think that would work.
That would be interesting. Ingram and Breda, Ingram and McKinnon on San Fran, like that.
That would be
and that's actually a perfect segue. I'm glad you stopped me before just doing a rough segue, because the situation I'm looking at is Ingram and Kamara. And just kind of thinking of, you know, this past week was one of the weeks that you loved about the Saints last year. Kamara finished as the ninth best running back and Ingram finished as the 10th best running back. And they were separated by exactly one fantasy point. So, you know, just real quick, what do you think that split's going to look like? There's six games left. Out of the six games left, what do you think that looks like for that Ingram-Kamara split?
I think this is still Kamara's backfield. He's still the lead guy. What will happen is games where New Orleans has to air it out, pass, they're going to end up in games with, you know, 40-plus point results on each side. Kamara's going to get used more. He's more dynamic. He's more explosive. He's better adept to putting on points on the board. There's nothing Mark Ingram does at this point in his career that Alvin Kamara doesn't do better. But in games where they're going to have leads or they're going to want to kill the clock or the other team's terrible against the run, that's when Ingram's going to have his upside games and go from being a low-end RB2 or flex play to, like we saw this week, as you know, a top 8 or 9 RB. So
it's a perfect situation that Mike explained exactly that way. That's they use those guys. That's exactly how they should use them. That's Mike read my mind.
So this week, Saints-Eagles.
Kamara game. I don't dislike Ingram. I have him in the low to mid RB2 range, but I got Kamara's the RB like 3. This should be points galore. For some reason, the spread's at like 8.5, 9 points, which is mind-boggling to me. So, you know, if Ingram falls in the end zone, you're probably safe at an RB2 guy. But I think this is another Kamara 30-point game where he gets 2-plus touchdowns.
I think they're pretty close. I think they're within like 4 or 5 fantasy points of each other.
Next week, Thanksgiving, the eight o'clock game, Falcons Saints. What about that one?
Play both, because Atlanta can't stop you, me, and John at running the ball. So, how the hell are they going to stop Ingram and Kamara?
I love the fact that we say this. I would love for any time for like an NFL team to be like, "All right, come on." Like, no. You guys say it all the time. Come on.
Yeah.
By the time I ran from the sidelines of the backfield, I need the oxygen.
Yeah, I have a feeling I'm exaggerating here, obviously. But, yeah, that's a matchup you're going to like. You know, Philly's tough against the run. Atlanta's not. That's how you got to look at it. Kamara, week in and week out, is going to be a top 5 or 7 guy. Ingram's going to get his based upon game flow and the matchup. So,
yeah. So next one, and this is the last one, back-to-back Thursday night games. Saints Cowboys week 13.
Cowboys have a good defense.
Yeah, and they're good against the run. I still don't dislike Ingram. Kamara, like we said, is obviously Kamara. But, you know, I can see a scenario where that game is close. And I can see a scenario. Is that in Dallas or in New Orleans? Do you know?
I believe it is in Dallas.
Okay.
Yep. We're both in Dallas.
Yeah, I like Ingram better at home games. They'll have a better chance of being ahead and killing the clock, running 4-minute offense. Or games where they're outdoors because Breeze struggles in the elements to some degree, and that's when they typically go crazy with the running game. So, but like you said, Dallas is indoors. Well, I probably have Ingram in the mid to high end RB2, depending upon what else is happening that week. It's just going to be, again, dependent upon game flow and matchup. And yeah. Unfortunately, we can't change our lineups after the first half, which would be awesome. But, you know, so, yeah, you're gonna have to play a little bit of, for lack of a better term, Russian roulette with Mark Ingram and hope it doesn't come back to bite you, because he's going to be script-dependent, really.
Yeah. I mean, that's the reason why I bring it up, is because I feel like a lot of people are in this situation where they're trying to play. I mean, I don't know why you would have both of them on the same team, but I guess if you're lucky enough to have both of them on the same team, or, you know, most of us out there have one half of this equation, trying to figure out, you know, do I play Ingram as an RB2 or not? I mean, if you have Kamara, you're rolling him out there every week, but are you going to get the week where Kamara, you know, drops to an RB2 or a flex play and you're starting him as your RB1 and, you know, Ingram has a crazy game?
Yeah, so New Orleans is a machine right now. I could see Ingram being at least a mid-range RB2 almost every week from now on.
Yeah. I don't think you're going to get a game with Kamara doing, like, you know, low-end production. He's got three games this year under 20 PPR points, and that was against Cleveland before Ingram. the game back with Ingram against Washington, where he had, you know, 9 total touches, and then against Baltimore, who's number one team against the run.
Yeah.
26, 33, and 26 the last 3 weeks. Kamara's plug and play, and Ingram, honestly, I look at the schedule the rest of the way through into the playoffs. Out of that, maybe Carolina in week 15. I'm going to play him, I think. Yeah. Yeah, Atlanta, Dallas, Tampa, and Pittsburgh. So.
Yeah. All right. Let's jump into wide receivers then. Let's try and, again, bundle up some of these players here. So I'm propping up Anthony Miller, which goes hand in hand with who Mike is actually dropping here, because he's dropping Allen Robinson. And I'm going to throw this out there. Is it because of the matchup, Mike?
It's partly the matchup. It's partly Anthony Miller. It's just the kind of, again, I think this game between Chicago and Minnesota is going to be ugly. It's not going to be fantasy productive. Robinson, you know, returned from a groin injury that cost him 2 games, scored 31 points. But again, the Lions secondary, thank God Pat's not here, is a mess and banged up. And prior to being hurt, he was in a funk, scoring less than 11 points in 3 of the previous 4 games. Vikings are tough against the receivers, giving up just under 30 points a game. And they have not allowed a opposing wide receiver to score a touchdown over the last 5 games. With Anthony Miller playing well, Taylor Gabriel was having a nice stint there, and then he got, you know, hurt or dinged, and now he's played horribly, put a goose egg up last week. Xavier Rhodes is probably going to match up with Robinson, which means Anthony Miller, which is why I like him this week, is going to see whether it's Trey Waynes or one of the other corners. So,
and
I just don't like the matchup.
And that's exactly why I'm going Anthony Miller, because I think Allen Robinson draws Xavier Rhodes pretty much the entire game, which is going to hurt Allen Robinson. But then Anthony Miller is going to open a lot of things are going to open up for him from that point on. And then what makes it even more fun to pick Anthony Miller, I think I said Anthony Robinson just a second ago, but Anthony Miller and really any of the Bears receivers moving forward, is their schedule afterwards is super light. They go up against the Lions and the Giants and the Rams, who the Rams seems like such a tough matchup on paper, but they are in shootouts constantly, and the Bears seem to have the pieces to be in a shootout. The next week they go up against the Packers, same thing, could be a shootout game there with lots of points on the board, and the 49ers. So any of the Bears receivers really moving forward look really good. I'm just not willing to start Allen Robinson this week, just because I think Xavier Rhodes just shuts him down like Xavier Rhodes does.
Yeah. I mean, unless it's Marvin Jones, Xavier Rhodes pretty much just shuts everybody down. So
if Robinson's open, that's one thing about Trubisky. You know, he's not a good quarterback yet, but he's getting there. But he finds people when they're open. That's one thing he does do. When guys get open, he finds them when they're wide open. I mean, minus that one where, you know, they showed a tight end right in the middle of the end zone. That was one play. But when people, like when he played Tampa Bay, people were wide open. He finds those guys. But he's finding Miller, and Robinson's making some excellent catches. You know, no matter who's covered by, he finds a way to come down with the ball. He's a great receiver.
Yeah, I would rather start a guy like Anthony Miller as my, you know, third or fourth wide receiver than a guy like Allen Robinson is, you know, as high as maybe my second or third wide receiver. And just knowing that Allen Robinson's being played by Xavier Rhodes the whole game, whereas Anthony Miller could be going up against, you know, nickel corners, the second corner, depending on the defense, like a soft zone where he's going up against a linebacker, like that. I like that scenario so much more. Even though I do like Allen Robinson coming on, I think he's going to be really good to close out the season. I think this 1 week, particularly, I'm looking at Anthony Miller more so, especially than Allen Robinson.
So, yeah, he's been up and coming.
But if you really want to argue, John, let's get into it about the guy that you're propping up is the same guy that I'm dropping down. And it's actually really funny because it goes all the way back to our quarterback conversation. I'm dropping down Corey Davis and you're propping him up.
Well, ding, ding. Here we go. Corey Davis, you know, the guy's a stud. I've been, everybody's wanting him to perform. They've been waiting for this moment. They're waiting for a healthy quarterback. They've been waiting for him to have his opportunities. And he's gotten his opportunities the last couple of weeks, especially last week. He did great. You know, he's coming up with everything. He's minus some of the balls not throwing on target, or he wasn't ready for one ball. Hit him right in the hands, kind of, but as soon as he turned his head, it was already where he didn't expect it. But Corey Davis is getting pelted with targets. Just the targets he's getting alone will make him a wide receiver one, let alone the catches he makes and what he does after the catch, too. Yes. All about this. And healthy Mariota, I think that he's going to be he's going to start being a receiver everybody wanted him to be for the last couple of years.
See, I expect that to happen at some point. I don't think it's this week. I don't know if it's time. I don't know if it's that time's going to happen this year. I just feel like the Titans they're just a team that, like you said, there's times where Mariota doesn't find them. There's times where, like, their chemistry is just off. There's times where they're not the relationship that you want from a wide receiver that you feel really confident about starting. It's not a Davante Adams, Antonio Brown, an Eli Odell, a Matty Ice, Julio Jones. Like, they don't have that connection yet.
Corey Davis missed the whole year with a hamstring problem, and then Mariota missed half this year with a hand issue. Yeah. Now they're both starting to be healthy. Everything's starting to – this is what we wanted, was to see a healthy quarterback throw into a healthy wide receiver. Now they have a healthy relationship. Everything's getting healthy. This is great. I love it.
Yeah, and the one last thing that I'll throw out there for at least this week and why I'm dropping down Corey Davis, at least for this week, is – and you guys were debating this all the way back in the Bell conversation. It's the Colts defense. The Colts defense is the eighth best against fantasy wide receivers. So, yes, I think Corey Davis is going to get who else is he throwing to in that entire Titans offense? So, yeah, he's going to get the majority of those points, but the Colts are allowing the eighth best, or really the eighth least amount of points for fantasy wide receivers. So, like I said, I want Corey Davis to be good. I'm in the same boat of he is a stud and he just needs a healthy quarterback. He needs a strong supporting cast around him, and he'll be he has potential just all over him, and I want to see that happen. It's just not going to happen this week. Sorry, Jen.
Let me chime in real quick. I agree with you guys both, but here's my take on Davis. If by some chance he's on the waiver wire, go pick him up, but don't play him this week. And the Colts number about eighth best versus receivers, that's a little bit skewed. They've given up big games to teams with good receivers and even average receivers. The Jets got 42 points on them. Where the number skewed is 10 against Philly before Alshon got back, 28 against the Raiders, 19 against Buffalo, 28 against the Jaguars. And here's an interesting thing I also saw. I saw an interview with Logan Ryan on YouTube, and he talked about after that big game against Philly where, you know, Corey Davis had that 31-point performance, they felt like they just came off the Super Bowl, and then they lost three straight to Buffalo, Baltimore, and the Chargers. Came off the bye, got their mind right, have won two in a row. The 2 weeks, 12 for Davis, 25.5 Sunday versus New England. If he does it again against Indy this week, he has another 15-plus point game, then I'm with John here. I think this has finally come to fruition. He's real. And we're talking about a guy who could be a borderline lottery ticket for you going into the playoffs.
Yeah, I could see that happening. I'm not excited to start him this week.
No, I would not start him this week. I don't, with any confidence, I would not. you know.
So, John, if you're moving him up because you're moving him up for rest of the season, I'm on board. Especially like Mike's scenario that he just laid out is, you know, if he has a good week here, then yeah, it's, you know, fire him up on all cylinders. But I'm just nervous about that.
He's only showing talent. He's getting targets. He's going to get the ball thrown to him. I don't care who they're playing. You know, if it's Jacksonville, if it's Indianapolis, if it's whoever, you know,
Derrick Henry had one good week. Come on, don't discount that. Let's be on the Derrick Henry train.
And Rube, two touchdowns, baby.
All right. Let's see. You want to go with who you're propping up, Mike, or who you're dropping down, John? Who wants to go first here?
I'll go ahead and go since John's been yapping for a few minutes there. I'm moving up Kenny Golladay, and finally, Lord Almighty, he broke out of that funk he's been in. He scored 19.8 fantasy points against the Bears on Sunday. Yes, a lot of it was in garbage time. Who cares? You still get the points. They count whether it's in the first quarter or the fourth quarter. In the previous three games, he only scored a total of 16.3 points. Golden Tate's out of town. He's cleared the number one receiver, and it looks like he's finally going to be able to play into that role. The Panthers give up about the league average of points per game to opposing receivers. However, the last two games, they have been in a major funk, giving up nearly 91 fantasy points and four touchdowns the last 2 weeks. Golladay is going to get peppered with targets, especially if Marvin Jones is not playing. To me, this is a high volume, high upside, safe floor scenario this week.
Nice. It's I agree with that too. No, not at all. I'm good with Golladay. I think the opening up of the running game, you know, is going to open up the passing game too. Golladay is a stud. He's a local kid from Chicago. He's I saw a lot of film on him. He's worked his way up to where he's at right now through hard work. He's a stud. I don't argue at all with him being moving up.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting scenario based upon how well he plays. And really going forward, you know, real quick, take a sidebar here about dynasty value. Is he maybe a top 35, 40 startup pick next year?
I wouldn't doubt that at all.
So, all right. So, John, what do you, let's see what you guys say. Who are you moving down?
Tyler Boyd.
Shock.
I think he's, that Tyler Boyd is a good number two. I don't think I don't think he could fill the shoes with, I don't think he could fill the shoes with, AJ Green out for a couple of weeks. I think John Ross will actually become more of a better receiver than Tyler Boyd will this week. Tyler Boyd doesn't do very well when he's covered like a blanket. That's not his role. He's a good Robin to the Batman.
Yeah, I agree. This week is just not pretty at all. The Ravens are one of the tougher teams against receivers, and you know, AJ Green's gonna be out at least this week, and then maybe 12 or 13 as well. Boyd went from being a high end or mid to high end wide receiver two to honestly, I dropped them into the flex range this week. I just don't trust what they're doing. They got killed by New Orleans, and it wasn't even as close as the final score seemed up here.
Yeah, and this is what I mentioned last week also about, Marvin Lewis not being that much better of a coach than Todd Bowles. And, taking a wide receiver like Boyd, who is a slot receiver, he's a really, really good slot receiver that can put up wide receiver one numbers from the slot position. And moving him out to the perimeter just because they need to put a guy out on the perimeter and their number one guy went down.
Yep.
But at least Bowles is smart enough not to hire Hugh Jackson.
And on that note, discussion over. The Bengals are now doomed.
Yeah. We won't go down that road of why and how and everything else.
Yeah. All right. Let's jump into some situations that we're looking at. I've already thrown it out there. Start the Bears rest of the season. They have a super, super light schedule for wide receivers after this week. Don, you were talking about, you know, how good can Galladay be? I think we kind of touched on it a little bit. I think he's going to be really, really good.
Yeah.
Anybody want to add on to that one about Galladay being really, really good?
Galladay is going to be a little bit limited because I don't know what is going on with Matt Stafford. He just seems to be in some kind of weird funk. Maybe he's still concussed from the 10 sacks he took a couple weeks ago against Minnesota. Who knows? But Galladay should step into a mid to high-end wide receiver two for fantasy owners, given just the sheer volume and the fact that they're probably going to be behind a number of games, and the game script's going to go in his favor. So,
yeah,
that's exactly it.
And Galladay's a receiver, you know, unlike Boyd, that can play in both of those positions. He can play on the perimeter or he can play in the slot. And he's actually, you know, a stronger perimeter play because he is such a big, big guy that can, you know, really go up and get those balls and stuff like that and be that kind of, you know, he's not going to be the number one guy there, but well, with the injuries and tape being gone, he kind of is the number one guy there, but it's going to be real interesting to see how they actually use him there. I think that's the biggest thing is maybe not how good can Galladay be. It's really just like, what are they going to do with him?
Yeah. You can only be held back by good matchups or bad matchups and poor coaching. And right now it does not look like they're doing a very good job getting him the ball in the right ways.
Yeah. And then this one's not really touched on yet, but Mike, you want to talk about Brandon Cooks and Robert Woods. You think they're going to be top 10 wide receivers the rest of the season. So you are not concerned at all whatsoever about Josh Reynolds being the number one wide receiver rest of season.
No, I like Reynolds as a pickup. I think he's going to have some relative value in terms of low end flex play going forward with Cup out of the lineup, which is unfortunate because Cooper Cup is really not the most talented and outside of Gurley, he is the most important piece to that offense, I think. Cooks and Woods are already top 10 guys in PPR. Woods is 9, Cooks is 10. So I don't think there's any reason to think it's going to go the opposite way. They're going to struggle. The rest of the schedule for the rest of the year is either receiver-friendly or relatively neutral, so it's not like they have a tough matchup. And let's face it, this Rams offense is pretty much like matchup-based or matchup-proof anyways. So you're going to play Gurley, obviously. You're going to play Goff pretty much every week, and these two receivers should be plug-and-play, wide receiver, low-end one, high-end two for you week in and week out.
Yeah.
Losing Cup really sucks for the Rams, but for fantasy owners, you have Woods and Cooks, just more targets their way.
I don't think Reynolds goes anywhere near those two the rest of the season. Not even close.
No.
Yeah, that was pure sarcasm, guys. I agree completely. I think that it's a push for Gurley as well. I think, you know, a lot of those Cooper Cup, you know, we have a short yardage situation. We could run it with Gurley, or we have one of the best kind of cut on a dime, accelerate in and out of breaks type of receivers. We can run him out on a quick little zigzag and, you know, pick up 2 yards super easy. I think when you eliminate that other option of Cooper Kupp being that guy, that opens up more options for Gurley to be, you know, well, give it to Gurley then. Not really a loss for them. So,
all right.
Yeah, tight ends.
Tight ends. Let's hit tight ends. All right. I'll do my prop up real quick because it's pretty straightforward. I'm going Ricky Seals-Jones, and it's because he's playing against Oakland, and Oakland sucks all over, and especially against the tight end. And I think Arizona is going to be able to, you know, move the ball and score however they feel like against Oakland. And as long as David Johnson doesn't score every single you know, touchdown and pick up every single yard that the offense moves. I'm thinking at least a little shine is going to go to Ricky. And that means, you know, hopefully he either gets a touchdown or he goes, you know, 5 for 50 and call it a fantastic tight end day, because that's a tight end one number.
Ricky Seals-Jones has been getting a lot of his air yards are phenomenal this year. He's getting all the throws to him. He's not making things happen, but eventually it's just going to have to click. There were the quarterback and the tight end are going to be on the same page. And I agree with you 100% that Ricky Seals-Jones is the most uptick in this on the tight end and in these the mid-tier tight end guys.
Yeah, yes. With the number of guys on the bye this week, you're going to need to squeeze somebody. Like you said, Seth, Oakland pretty much just sucks everywhere. They've given up on the season. They've quit. They're thinking about Maui. So I like RSJ. It's definitely a good streamer for this week, if not the rest of the year.
Yep. All right. Mike Hooper.
Yep. Give me some Hooper. Surprisingly,
Hooper drives the boat.
Yeah, exactly. Surprisingly, Hooper is the tight end. Damn it, Seth. Hooper is the tight end 6 for the year, averaging 12 points per game, which is a little surprising. He's been pretty consistent, scoring at least 7 points in 78% of his games. Last week against the Browns, he scored 21.5, marking the second time this year over 20. A lot. I could throw stats all day long. But the punchline of it is the Cowboys are mediocre, too friendly against tight ends. And they gave up 40.5 points to Zach Ertz, which is the best tight end performance of the year. Start Hooper, plain and simple.
Yeah, I don't know how to feel about that, because I feel like Ertz is, like, with Gronk being hurt, like, I think Ertz is the number one tight end in the NFL right now. So to give up, I mean, the number one tight end, the number one amount of points, I don't see Hooper as anywhere near that good, but I could definitely see him having a good enough game where he's a tight end one, where, you know, he's not, you know, don't expect Ertz numbers.
Oh, no. Of course not. No, I'm not saying he's going to get anywhere near 40 points, but I'm saying if Dallas can give up 40 points to Ertz, which, by the way, was 9 points higher than the second highest tight end game this year, Ebron, in week 5 versus the Patriots, right? What's Hooper worst case going to get? 13, 14? You're talking, that's mid to high end tight end one. So,
yeah. Yeah, no, I think I hate playing people against my Cowboys, but yeah, no, there's definitely a start, because Hooper is a guy that the Cowboys have enough to worry about on that Falcons offense that, you know, that's just going to leave people open. And even though the Cowboys have a really fast line of linebackers there, they're going to be paying attention to either trying to put pressure on Matt Ryan or trying to cover, you know, provide support either in the flats or whatever to, you know, the wide receivers in the corners. So yeah, that leaves things open for Hooper. Yeah. So I'm not against it.
Just not happy about it.
Yeah, it is what it is. Cowboys.
Cowboys. Well, talking about Cowboys in their division, my tight end who I'm moving up is Evan Ingram. I think this week they're playing Tampa Bay.
Nope, lost you for a minute, John.
And leaves, you know, the Giants are wide open. They can throw the running back. They can throw downfield. In the middle of the field's wide open. Evan Ingram's there to catch passes. He's very athletic. He's a very good tight end. That's who I'm going with this week. Gut feeling and probably fantasy stats wise, I think this is a perfect matchup for him.
Yeah, it is. He bounced back last week, struggling in the previous couple of games. Tampa sucks against the tight ends, just plain and simple. You know, they give up 60 points a game
against a lot of players.
Pretty much like everybody. I mean, the three of us could probably score on Tampa. So, yeah, I like being a decision. He's actually been dropped in a couple of leagues, so check your waiver wire. Some owner might have a jump bait on him, and hey, good matchup this week.
Yeah, and then I'm moving down. As long as it's around me, I'm moving down Ebron. I know everybody loves him. He's had a great year so far, but you know, I just Jacksonville's getting all the targets, and he's going to get the targets. I know Ebron got 3 targets last week, caught 3 passes, made the most with him, and even ran in a touchdown. But Those aren't going to happen every week. He had a spectacular week last week. Back to reality for Ebron. I think it's going to be the Jack Del Rio show from starting next week on most of the season.
Yeah, I agree. I think with Doyle, he's going to be the main target guy. You're kind of going to be dependent on a touchdown for Ebron. But he's getting touchdowns. He's got, what, like 10 of them in 9 games this year? So
yeah, I'm not saying he's going to get skunked or nothing, but I just think that it's Jack Doyle's going to get a lot more targets, make a lot more happen. Ebron's going to get his, maybe, you know, 2 or 3 targets again, make something happen, hopefully. If not, he can have one of those games where he gets three targets, 2 catches for 9 yards or 15 yards. You know, it's happened before.
Totally agree. Ebron's going to be a low-end tight end one. The one advantage he has over Doyle is his ability to line up out wide and give him that athletic mismatch against the corner that they target a lot in the red zone. But I agree. Doyle's a, you know, mid to high, you know, I don't want to say high, but, you know, 6th, 7th ranked tight end the rest of the year for me. Ebron's probably 12 or 13. So,
yeah, I was just about to mention that same type of scenario. But I'll lead off first with saying that the Titans are one of the top teams in stopping fantasy tight ends.
Yes.
But you just mentioned, Mike, Ebron doesn't always play from the tight end position. So I think that is his bonus there. I can definitely see being low on Ebron and tempering your expectations, especially after putting up a 28-point game where he ran in a touchdown. But if I have Ebron, I'm probably starting him. Even though the matchup isn't good right now, like how do you not start Ebron when you're like literally he's a tight end one if he just catches a touchdown, which like he does every week.
Yeah, it's hard to say no, but when you see the target share going so much in Doyle's way, that's the only reason I'm moving Ebron down, because eventually he's going to have to start cooling off, you know, like a Jared Cook or something, you know, like that kind of deal. Right, Mike?
Like a Jared Cook, Mike?
Yeah, geez, don't get me started. How many times have I said tonight that the Raiders have quit already on John Gruden in the year, and they're thinking about Maui? I think this is like the 4th or 5th time. There is nothing, and I mean nothing, in all capitals, I want to do with the Raiders. Zip, Zula, nothing. None of their players are fantasy relevant and can be trusted. Since trading away Mark Cooper, Cooks has just 6 catches for 72 yards and 13 PPR fantasy points. It's not pretty. We went over earlier about Nelson and Brian dealing with knee injuries that are going to be week to week. In Brian's case, maybe, you know, the rest of the season potentially. Cook's going to get all the defense's attention. The Raiders' defense can't stop the 3 of us. So they're going to be, you know, knowing what's coming. And I just don't like it. The Cardinals this week makes it even worse. 7th best team against tight ends, giving up just 9 points per game. And the Cardinals haven't given up a touchdown to the tight end since week 2. Combine everything together, place him on Arizona.
Yeah, I mean, I don't – Jared Cook, yeah, limit your thoughts about Jared Cook. But literally just limit your entire – like, I would not start anyone on the Raiders. Like, I just don't think I could do it. I don't think there's anyone there that I'm like, you know what, I feel confident about starting this player on the Raiders. Like – I wouldn't even start a kicker from the Raiders right now. No. No. It is literally that bad.
Maybe, you know, we talked about before about how some teams would never quit on because their contracts are trying to get in the future. But it just seems like the Raiders just kind of threw in the towel. Like, they don't even care if they're on the Raiders next year. They want to go somewhere else just to get out of there.
Yeah, it kind of seems like when Gruden came in, he was like, "You're out. You're cool. You're out. You're cool." Yeah. And the players are just like, well, whatever. It's either happening or it's not. I don't even know. So
you're cheap, you're expensive. You're cheap, you're expensive. Right.
But, yeah, good pick with Jared Cook. Real quick, I'm going to drop down Mr. O'Shag Hennessy, James O'Shaughnessy from the Jaguars. It's the Jags, people. It's Blake Bortles. It's a fluke. And yeah, if you guys don't have anything else to say, moving on.
Yeah, it's Jacksonville. It's like almost like Oakland. Under Leonard Fournette, I don't trust anybody.
Yeah. And then Kittle's going to be really good for the rest of the year. That's all. That's what you were going to tell us there, Mike?
Yeah, I could throw a bunch of stats at you and give you all kinds of cool things, but punchline is Kittle's a beast. Outside of Ertz and Kelsey, he's the guy you want to play, plug and play going forward. The Niners do have a bye this week, but they come back next week and face the Buccaneers. Kelsey's on a bye, and Zach Ertz is facing the Giants, who are kind of tough against tight ends, so Kittle will probably be my tight end one for next week. But again, you got him. You probably got him in the, you know, 9th, 10th round. Great investment because he's played lights out. And I was way wrong on him going into the year. I thought, you know, San Francisco, they were going to go elsewhere. Garoppolo got hurt. And he's playing with, you know, whether it's Mullins or Beathard or even with Garoppolo, he's playing well. So,
yeah, he sure is.
I was just going to say, you forgot to mention the phenomenal quarterback play he'll have for the rest of the season.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Mullins looked okay.
go get you some Mullins. Anyways, that wraps up the tight ends. Let's jump into which games we're looking forward to next week. Just so you're aware, literally the entire AFC East is off. Bills, Dolphins, Patriots, Jets, the Niners, as Mike just mentioned, and the Browns also are off this week. So, John, who are you looking forward to watching this weekend?
I'm looking forward to Steelers and Jaguars. That's a game that I think Big Ben doesn't do very well on the road. The Jaguars have a defense that's, you know, everybody says how good they are. They're kind of, they're overrated in my opinion, but they're still good. Blake Bortles is playing better. They got Fournette back. This could be an upset special here with the Jaguars. That's my game of the week. I honestly think that Jacksonville could win this game.
Oh, I agree. Even though Vegas has got the line like at 5.5 in favor of Pittsburgh, Big Ben doesn't play well on the road. The Jaguars just seem to have their number, and coming off their, you know, thumping of Carolina last Thursday night, they may be kind of in a letdown mode. And Jacksonville, whose season probably is over, maybe just fighting for pride. And, you know, these two teams have no problem talking trash back and forth. So it will be interesting, to say the least.
They have the Steelers -6 in this game, and I don't. The Jaguars are just playing better. They're just playing better right now. They're another team like the Titans that are kind of coming into their own. They're as the season progresses, they're picking up the offense. The defense is doing a little bit better, minus the injuries. I mean that happens. But I'm all over the Jaguars this week.
What's the over under on this one? You guys know?
Do not know that.
47.5.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, so a little bit of a lower scoring game. I was curious to know, based on, you know, what people were expecting for last week with Steelers Carolina. I'm wondering if this was, people were projecting this one to be a higher scoring one, but no, this is an interesting game, that's for sure.
If last week's game was in Carolina, if it was in Carolina, it'd be a different story. But the Steelers do so good at home; it's ridiculous how that happens. But like I said, it is a road game. Big Ben doesn't do that well on the road. Neither does the rest of the team. We still have some concussion protocol issues right now with the running back.
James Conner.
You know what you're going to get. You might be seeing the Jalen Rand, or what's his name? Who's the backup for Conner?
Jalen Samuels.
And he's somebody I love before the season started, so I'd love to see him get a chance to show. So I think anybody could do good in that offense. It's just an offensive situation. But I'm the reason I'm picking this game is I think the Jaguars can upset the Steelers.
Interesting. I like it. Mike, which game are you excited about?
Give me the Eagles at the Saints. It is literally the only afternoon game that is worth watching. If you cannot watch it, take a nap. Because the Broncos, Chargers, and Raiders, Cardinal games are going to be boring as hell.
U-G-L-Y.
The game should be high scoring. For some reason, the spread's like 8.5 points for Philly, which is mind-boggling to me. I understand New Orleans being a favorite, but not by over a touchdown. That's crazy. And it should have plenty of fantasy points. this week I have Wentz and Breeze, both as top four options. We already kind of went over Kamara and Ingram. Thomas, Alshon Jeffrey, Golden Tate, and Zach Ertz are clearly must-starts. And newsflash, guys, don't play either defense.
Yeah, Minus nine. New Orleans minus nine, over under 54.5.
Yeah. Nine? I thought it was at jeez.
No, no, it's nine.
And outside of the Monday night game with the Chiefs and Rams, this game should have the most fantasy points scored over the weekend. And like always, you guys can find my ranking, start, sit, all that fun stuff on Twitter at MikeSports22.
Yeah, and speaking of the Monday night game, literally everyone should be watching the Monday night game. It's Chiefs-Rams. I believe it's official now, no longer in Mexico City.
Correct.
No, it's not. It's officially moved to back to San Diego.
Yeah.
Did you guys see the pictures of the field? It looked like a damn tornado came through.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was ugly.
Crazy. But anyways, the game that I'm excited to go see, not go see, but to watch is the Sunday night game, the Vikings and Bears.
Got flexed.
That's going to be a good matchup.
The Bears.
Are you going to do the dance for us? If you're not going to do the dance, it doesn't count.
I'm not doing a truffle shuffle, but I'll do the dance.
I mean, this is literally for kind of who's at the top of the NFC North. So I'm excited to see what happens. I think the Bears have just come on as a team that's exciting to watch now. And part of that's Mitchell Trubisky. Part of that's Allen Robinson. Part of it's that defense, Khalil Mack really showing up. They're a fun team to watch, and the Vikings have, you know what you're going to get from Steelen. You usually know what you're going to get from Diggs. There's a whole lot of fantasy potential there, and a really interesting kind of matchup in terms of real football as well. In terms of what does this mean in terms of playoffs and moving forward and who has a chance. So I'm excited to see that game.
Kirk Cousins is going to have to earn his paycheck in this game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Khalil Mack, 7 sacks. Lock it.
Chicago minus three, over under 45 in this game.
Chicago's minus three, really?
Yes, they are. The Bears at home. Bears. The Bears,
yeah.
72.
The Bears have had an easy schedule the last couple of weeks. That's why Vegas is back in Minnesota. If Chicago does win this game outright, they should then be no longer underdogs the rest of the way. They've proven that they can compete with the quote-unquote upper echelon teams.
Yes.
Yeah.
Especially if the offense is the reason why they win the game. It's not a 9-6 game, but they put up 30 points.
Well, the offense doesn't have to win the game. The defense is doing their job, so it's a well-balanced team. They just need some. They need a little bit of help in the defensive backfield, but other than that, the front's getting it done. The front seven getting it done, and that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, definitely going to be a fun game to watch. All right, boys. Anything else to add in here, or
mm-hmm.
for the night?
I think we've touched base on everything needs to be talked about.
Yeah, we had a whole lot. All right. Tell them one more time where they can find you on the Twitters.
Sure.
And we're out.
You guys can find me on Twitter at MikeSports22. I got a bunch of good content coming out. Feel free to ask any questions. DMs are always open. Just let me know, guys.
And you can find me on Twitter at John McGlynn at Meathead_75. I'm always here for any questions, anything you need. Thanks for listening to the show this week.
And I am the At Home Dad on Twitter at FF the At Home Dad. And that wraps up one more episode of the FF Dynasty 260 Redraft Podcast. Thanks, boys and girls. See you next time.
Take care, guys.
Have a good night.